August 23, 2021, it's the Whopper Pedro Show.
Well, I don't know. Well, it was an attempt. It was an attempt to create something, I think, with more of a label, you see, than through evolution.
You mean it didn't evolve naturally out of the desires of the musician?
I don't think so. Well, maybe it did. I can't say that. It was an attempt to do something, which is that the evolution is about trying too, you know. But there's something in evolution that, man, it just happens when it's ready. You know, although you have to try also. And this just seemed, it wasn't really where it was coming from, you know. It was, an attempt to blend, to wed the two musics, right?
Mm-hmm.
Is this what it really was?
Well, I suppose that's what it was supposed to be.
Yeah.
You said that, talking about saxophone players, that there was a common pool that everybody dipped into. Maybe here there wasn't enough of that pool, I mean, for people to dip into.
Well, I just think it wasn't time. It was an attempt to do something at a time when it just wasn't time for this to happen. And therefore, it wasn't lasting. But there may have been some things that came out of this that have been beneficial in promoting the final change, which is coming. See? So nothing is really wasted, although it might, you know, it might appear to fail or not succeed, you know, the way that the men felt they would have decided to. But
even the mistakes can be instructive if you know how to utilize them. Do you make any attempt, or do you feel you should make any attempt to educate your audience in ways that aren't musical? But it's obvious you want your audience to understand what you're doing musically, mm-hmm. but do you feel that you want them to understand other things, too, and that you have some kind of responsibility?
Sure, I feel this, and this is one of the things I'm concerned about now. I just don't know how to go about this. I don't want to... I want to find out just how I should do it, you know, and I think that it's going to have to be very subtle. I mean, you can't ram philosophies down anybody's throat, and the music is enough, you know, and that's philosophy. But I think the best thing I can do this time is try to get myself in shape, you know, and know myself. If I can do that, then I'll just play, you see, and leave it at that. Then I believe that will do it, you know, if I really can get to myself and then be just as I feel that I should be and play it, you see, and I think they'll get it. Because music goes a long way, and it really is, it can influence.
Sunday.
Walk for Pedro show. Happy Monday. Start out John Coltrane talking to Frank Kosky in 1966, the next year. Then we had Donna Lucene, Casey Anderson. And due to those Estonian software engineers with their Skype invention, I got Brother Casey Anderson with me. Welcome aboard, Casey.
Thank you, Walt. Thanks for having me, man. This is so cool to be a part of this. I love the show.
Absolutely. Oh, wow. Big honor, right, man. Look, please bring your earliest musical recollection.
My earliest musical recollection. Well, my grandparents on my mother's side died in a flood when she was 22. My grandfather was a saxophone player. He had a band called the Many Sounds of Nine. So my earliest musical recollection is being introduced to my grandfather by my mom playing one of his records for me and saying, "This was your grandfather," and then going through old photos of his band and getting to know him that way. I never got to meet him, you know, because I had not been born yet when they passed, but I met him that way. And I think that, you know, I was one of those kids who, when I said I wanted a guitar, my parents jumped at the chance to get it for me, and I think it probably had something to do with that.
Him being on sax or just having a band?
Just her her having a dad who was in a band and who did the gig for a living. I wasn't one of those kids who when I said, you know, I want to play guitar, my folks weren't like, "Oh, no, you got to, you know, whatever, you got to stay in school, stay dedicated to get a real job," or what, you know, when I said I want to play guitar, and then when I said I want to do this as a job, they were real supportive.
Ah, because she knew her pop and her grandfather. Yeah, I understand. She could relate.
Yep, totally.
Okay, so this pad you grew up in, did they have musical instruments?
Yeah, we had a piano and keyboard. My mom played piano and sang a little bit, and then I turned 11 in 1990, and I grew up in Portland, and so, you know, around that time it was like Nirvana, Pearl Jam, Mudhoney, Soundgarden, those bands, and so then I said I wanted a guitar, and I got a little, like a knockoff Stratocaster and a little PV practice amp and started on that, and then the older I got, the more guitars we had around the house.
You mean you didn't jump on that piano?
I didn't jump on the piano. I learned the piano, like, way later.
Okay. There's a lot of hell stories about the piano lesson.
Yeah, I didn't. Yeah. Nope, I had, I avoided the childhood piano lesson hell stories. I had cool guitar teachers.
It depends on the teacher. So, yeah, so you get a guitar, and you ask for a guitar. You didn't just get a guitar. And so you took lessons, okay. What was that like? Because there's actually some guitar hell stories, too, but not as many as piano ones.
Not as many. No, I didn't have... Like, my lessons at first were just, I would go in and I would say, like, I want to learn to play this riff, you know, and I would bring the Nirvana cassette or CD with me, and my guitar teacher would listen, and then he would show me how to play the riff. And that went on for a long time, and then I think, like, it's not a hell story, but my guitar teacher at one point was like, "Man, don't you want to know how to do something other than just, like, play other people's shit?" And he was like, "If you want to know how to, like, make up a song on your own, then we're going to have to learn a little bit more than that." And so then, but then it got interesting, you know, then I started to learn some more stuff.
Yeah. Can I ask you about school? Were you in the choir, the marching band, or shit like that?
No, I was not. I was a drama kid for a little bit of high school. I was in some plays, and then my freshman year in high school, I played basketball, but I got kicked off the basketball team for some drug related incidents early on in high school.
What about the first record you bought with your own money?
First record I bought with my own money was "It Takes a Nation of Millions to Hold Us Back."
Yeah, good record. And first gig you saw?
First gig I saw was Stone Temple Pilots were the headliner, but they had the Meat Puppets and Red Cross with them. And it was here in Portland at the Civic Auditorium, and my dad went with me, and he really dug the Meat Puppets and Stone Temple Pilots, but he wasn't into it. Red Cross was, like, a little bit heavy for his taste.
Meat Puppets, old friends of mine. I know the McDonald brothers, too.
Yeah.
Hawthorne, from the Beach Boy town. That's not by the beach. Well, it's
about
10 miles. Yep. not after school, like graduating, but after school in the afternoon, did you get into the basement band, bedroom band, garage band?
Yeah, garage band for sure. I mean, I grew up in Vancouver, Washington, which is just north of a few miles north of Portland, Oregon, and we were, you know, we were just like bored suburban kids who all of us had guitars or drums or bass, and we got together in my friend Mark's garage.
And now, what was it? Was it like copy, like with the guitar teacher copying songs off records, or were you writing your own shit?
It started off the same, copying songs off records, like everybody, you know, yeah. We played the Come As You Are intro or whatever. But then we started to kind of, you know, once all of us probably, I would say probably around 13 or 14, once all of us had knew our way around the instruments a little bit, we started to kind of write our own stuff.
And did this band have a name? Did you do gigs, or was it just
We didn't do gigs, but what was the name? It was like Jim Jones and the Kool-Aid Kids was one of the names. And there was another one that I can't remember, but they didn't stick for very long. I feel like that's a thing with high school bands. Everybody's, they're changing the name like once a week.
Okay, but no gigs. So when is your first gig?
My first gig, I think I was 19, and I play it at a bar here in Portland that doesn't exist anymore, called the Snake Something Tavern. It was just a small little bar, and because I was 19, I could only, like, I had to wait outside, load in, do the gig, and then bail right after. Like, I couldn't stick around, you know, because I wasn't of age. And it was mostly just, like, my folks came and their friends came. Because none of my buddies could get into the bar.
Yeah, the circumstance of the sitch.
Yeah.
But it was, they didn't throw shit. It was success?
It was a success. I mean, it was like all the, you know, it was like all the grown-ups from my neighborhood and some of their friends. So they were all really polite.
Not a band. This was a man alone gig.
Yeah, it was a solo gig. Like, I had written a handful of songs that I thought were kind of cool on acoustic guitar and did a solo gig. I didn't I didn't play in a band that had gigs until I was in my 20s and had moved to Bellingham. And then I was in this band called Sweethearts of the Rodeo, and we did an every Wednesday at a bar called the Grand Avenue Ale House, where we just did like country covers, Chris Hillman stuff, Graham Parsons shit. Stuff like that.
College town. I played there a couple times.
Yep.
A little bit north. What? Can you remember the first song you wrote?
I can remember that the title of it was Highway 14, but I don't remember like how the song went. Okay. And I remember that it was like, and this is unfortunately something that plagues me to this day. It was like 9.5 minutes long, and it was a bunch of words. And I still, like every record, there's, you know, there's like a 7.5 minute song at the end of the record that's 100, you know, 200 words too.
The wind that needs to be bagged.
Yeah.
You know, that's the prescription. That's called for. I want to. You sent me this bad actor. Speaking of drama and shit, let's play.
He is a strange sensation. Tell me why you wanna Salvation.
time listening to older guys to figure which way to go, whether to hang your guitar high over the way you drag your smoke. 'Cause they look justified when drinking this day. Turn these swinging shots. Whether the days that live remembered or the one that left forgot. Just don't take your box and pass around. Let's spin meeting there like a glass of milk in the rain. I've forgotten about.
Pedro Show, that chunk of music started off with Casey Anderson, Bad Actor. Then we got Cedric Noel, brand new, Nighttimes, parentheses, Skin. Only he knows. Gotta have him on the show, right? Ither, I think that's how you pronounce it. City in Wait from King Champion Sounds out of Netherlands. King Woman. King of Swords. Not a king, huh? Have Yourself a Rich Guy Vacation from Sam Locke Ward, a feature Bryn Love. That's out of Iowa City, I know that. And next door, Dubuque, with Bob Bucko Jr. and Making Kings of Gestures. Yeah, a lot of king. Stuck in Playland, Bombas Prendon, D.C. area. And then finally, Casey Anderson. Older guys, I can relate. less younger guys. Okay, so you're saying no bands till your 20s. So you're man alone at your all your gigs. If you say the first one's at 19, that was years, yep. Right?
Yeah, that was. That's like the reverse progression of a lot of people. I think most people start off in bands and then. you know, get enough of an ego to believe that they can be a solo act. And I went the opposite. You know, I did the solo thing and then was like, well, I miss guitar solos. I got real tired of playing harmonica.
Okay. So you wanted the band. Yeah. I think maybe another reason is dudes can't afford to carry dudes.
Yeah,
might
yep.
be that too, but there might be some ego involved, yeah, of course, always. Just to get the balls to get in front of somebody and sing your song.
That's
heavy, man.
I think about that a lot, like to think that what you have is so important that a bunch of people should hear it.
Right.
You know, like every couple of years, I'm like, I have 50 minutes worth of shit that you all should hear.
Yeah,
and I've done you the service of putting it to music, so it's at least a little more palatable.
So if you think about it, you almost can talk yourself out of it. So you just gotta keep on keeping on. So, but let's go back in the timeline and stuff. Okay, so you do that bar gig. Your buddies can't get in because, you're too young. Do you get a four-track or recording at home?
Yep, I had a little Tascam. And like a Shure, you know, a Shure mic, and recorded at home and got familiar with it. And then I got really lucky. I don't think I've ever really talked about this. I got really lucky when I was 20. You used to be able to, like, Steve Earle had this imprint, this E-Squared Records imprint on, I think it was a Reprise imprint. And on the E-Squared website, you could send Steve a message. And I just sent him a message that said, you know, like, I'm 20 years old. I love your songs. You know, I've had a rough time with drugs and I'm trying to get through it. And we became kind of pen pals and then we became pals for real. And, so after recording at home, I made my first record with Eric Amble, who I had met through Steve, because he was in Steve's band at the time. You know, that was when the Transcendental Blues record came out. Yeah. And so my first real experience in the studio was with Eric Amble and the band that I had played in Bellingham.
Wow. Steve just lost his boy, huh?
Yeah, a year ago on the 20th.
Christ. Really. That was a heartbreak, man. You know, it's a tough war. It's a tough war with that stuff. And he was a talented musician.
He was great. He was a great songwriter, a really great finger-picking guitar player. And he, you know, I had known Justin since he was a kid because I met Steve when I was so young. And I think two days before Justin died, Ron Heathman died too. And I had known Ron since I was a kid, just from being in the Pacific Northwest and seeing the Soup Suckers a bunch of times. And it was like, that was a real blow, man, to lose those two right back to back like that from the same sort of thing.
Yeah, you know, whatever, we only got so much time and we trick ourselves and you always got time. You always, Jesus. So this, Mr. Earl was really, important. That's so bitter to him to be so generous.
Yeah, man, he was really, really generous, and he was generous with his advice, with his time. When the band would come through, I would hang with Steve for a couple of days at a time when they were in Seattle and Portland. He was just always so good to me, and I learned a lot, you know, just from being around him, and then from asking him questions about songs and. You know, he didn't ever sit down and say, this is how you write a song, but I would send him shit and he would say, you know, this works or this doesn't work. And I don't think I would have stuck with it, or I don't think I would have gotten to be good at it if I didn't have his generosity.
Yeah. You know, when it came to picking guys for a band, how'd you do it, Casey?
I kind of just fell in with those, that first band that I was in Bellingham, I used to go to that country night. They were a band before I met them, and I would go to that country night, and then I would hang with them after hours. And I said, you know, I can sing a bit. I have some songs of my own, and we got to know each other. And so I just kind of fell in with them. And then after that, I got really lucky. The next band that I was in was the band that's on this the Let the Bloody Moon Rise record, and it was all these guys from Seattle who I had admired growing up, and I just happened to, like, I had made friends with them over the years at shows, or I had friends who were their friends. So then it was, like, Andrew McCaig, Mike Musburger, Eric Corson, this guy Ty Bailey on keys. It was all these people that I really looked up to, and it was, like, I was floored, man. I couldn't believe that I got to be in a band with these people.
Yeah, so it wasn't like some like tryout shit.
No, I've never done. Yeah, I've never done the tryout thing. I've never done the like audition, bass player or drummer thing.
That's so scary. Like holding, you know, dudes in your hand, right? You're the decider. Oh my god.
Yeah.
Oh my god.
Yeah, so, man.
It's just like cats. Like, hey, I'd like to play with him. I'd like to play. And then they're playing with you.
Yeah, it was, it started with, it was real cool. It started with McCaig. I said, you know, I had this band in Bellingham. I'd moved back to Portland by then. I said, I want to make a record and I want it to be, a little bit heavier, a little more guitar stuff. And McCaig is a really great player, cool guy, easy hang. And then I said, I don't know who else to ask. And he said, well, let me ask Musburger and let me ask Corson and let me ask Ty Bailey. And I played him some songs and they were all into it. And it was that easy.
Yeah. About people.
Yep.
People ask me about the old days. They say it was about people. I think the new days is about people too.
No. Yeah. I mean, that's like 80% of the thing is the hang. Yeah. Like you're going to have to be in a van with these people for a big chunk of your life. And if the hang is tough, then it's not, it doesn't matter how good they are.
What about selling them the songs?
Well, that, I mean, I always go into the situation believing that people are going to be honest about whether or not they like the work. And I assumed that they did or they wouldn't have played on the songs. But I just said, you know, I always just said, like, here's the song. I didn't dictate parts to anybody. I just said, here's what I wrote. Here's the thing that I wrote. Let's work on it together. Because I feel like once you're in a band, even though it's still my name on the record, you know, it's Casey Anderson and the...
So you know who to blame. That's the way I put it. When I use my name, yeah, so you know who to blame.
Yeah.
So, but you're saying your tunes are kind of launch pads, springboards.
Yeah. I mean, I just bring them to the, you know, before the record, I take some time, I sit down and write, you know, a dozen or so songs and then bring them to the band and say, like, hey, this is, you know, these are the bones. Let's put some meat on it. Yeah. I have some ideas of how things can sound, but everybody that I've played with or worked with, I trust them. If I didn't trust them, I wouldn't play with them. So, you know, I'm not in the studio, like, barking orders at people. If somebody plays something, then I'll say, like, that's cool. Or, you know, let's try it this way.
You've heard the Buddy Rich tapes, right?
Oh, I've heard them.
One more clam, you're through. All L.A. band tonight. Count on it. Try me, right? Because he knew a little karate, so he's like always, try me, you know. But, yeah, it was a bone player. Actually, it was the music director of the band who recorded all that shit. And he, an Australian guy, was reading this thing in Mojo. He said, that's the only thing I'm known for. Yeah. That tape. You know? Keep your eyes and your mouth to yourself. Yeah, so there's other people, too. Neil Sedaka, right? The band gets shirts.
Yeah.
Right?
Yep. Yep.
I slice like a hammer. You know, okay, you're the boss. You can tell people what to do. But you're not going to get the best playing out of them doing shit like that, right? Obviously,
you're not,
they're frustrated cats. Yeah.
Yeah, and like I always believe that you bring these people in because they bring something,
absolutely,
right? Something that you wouldn't otherwise.
Absolutely.
I mean, if I could play all the parts of a record, I'd do it. It would cost me less money. But I can't. And so if I can't play the drums, I'm not going to tell a drummer how to play drums.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Like you said, you write the songs with them in mind.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's bitching. Look, we're at the end of the first hour, August 23, 2021, edition of Watt Peters, so special guest Casey Anderson. Hold tight for hour two! August 23, 2021. It's the second hour of the Watt for Pedro. Watt for Pedro show. Start off the second hour with Already Gone, Casey Anderson. Then we had Wedding from Shugo Tokumaru. Louis Fong with Spring Rain. It's called a pipa, this kind of a Chinese lute. And Lucas Abella out of Sydney, Australia. Itchy. And then Casey Anderson, Ain't Life Grand. And you didn't put a question mark at the end there. So you know it's grand.
I know it's grand.
Yeah.
It's a declarative statement.
Yeah, it's declarative, right. No interrogative. But like a tune like that, do you carry like a little book of words? Do you draw, like, do you have a reservoir of stuff, or are you made to order when it comes to songwriting time?
A little bit of both. Like, I'll have an idea for, I work, like, when I know it's time to make a record, I go, okay, it's time to write a record. And I write what I think is the first song and what I think is the last song, and then I try to figure out how to get from the beginning to the end.
All right, so you don't write songs. You write batches of songs.
Yeah, I write batches of songs. But every once in a while, I'll have a line or a couple of lines that I get edited out of one song, or, like, they don't fit the thing, and so I set them aside in a little notebook, and then when it's time to write the next thing, I come back to them. And Ain't Life Grand was one of those. I think I had the line, like, your sister's here again, mad as a wet hen, hide the hammers before you let her in. I had that little chunk of lines, and I thought it was like, this is too good to just leave somewhere, you know, to just leave in a notebook. I got to figure out how to write around that.
Oh, really? Okay. That's interesting. So, like, I could make a whole tune out of this.
Yeah. Sometimes, like, if a line or a couplet is like, I think it's real good, but it just doesn't work in the thing that I'm working on.
Yeah.
Then I just put it aside, and I think, like, I got to come back to that. You know, I could, like, if you're cooking and you're like, oh, you know, I have these really ripe peaches. Well, the recipe doesn't call for that. Well, tomorrow I got to use the peaches before they go bad.
Yeah, right. What about like these leashes? Voice memo. Do you like sing into? I've been doing this for bass lines because of my fucking memory.
Or yeah.
Lack of such. So you do this? You use a little, what's it called, voice memo?
I do, but it's almost always, do you play, when you do the bass lines, do you play the bass line or do you, like, hum it?
Because my mouth.
Yep, me too, so all my voice memos are, like, riffs, but it's, like, my mouth, so it's, like, na-na-na-na-na-na, you know, and then I go, like, I'll find one months later, and I'm, like, what the fuck was I doing, you know?
What about with your band? Do you give them sheet music? You probably teach them the parts that way, right?
I teach them, yeah, I mean, I teach them the song, so we'll chart out the song. But I don't do a lot of sheet music unless it's like unless it's strings or horns. Like with bass guitar, drums, we just chart it out. Usually use the Nashville numbers thing.
Okay, yeah. Everybody's used it, kind of shorthand. And,
yep.
I want to play this. You gave me some depression.
Vanity blades driving your Prius down the lost highway. Stand California down to Joshua Tree, to Bill Graham's ghost on the desert breeze, and then back to roommate to smoke a little weed. It's a pretty good story, but it don't impress me. There ain't no pension in my profession. All my life with natural regression. Laying in close, I got a confession. I've been dealing with some depression. Well, you sing Steve Earle 47 times, and you can play Sunday on your J45, but you don't care much for those communist lies. You'll still be voting Reagan if the fucker hadn't died. You love songs about whiskey, rambling in the dark, and black haired girls breaking hard men's hearts. You got a dog named Willie in your backyard. I got a couple cigarettes and a library card. There ain't no pension in my profession. All my life in natural regression. Laying in close, I got a confession. I've been dealing with some depression. Alright, blow on the buddy.
Shut up. sunshine bright, honey sweet. The earth has been good to me. The life growing under my feet has been a dawn. Sunshine bright, honey sweet. The earth has been good to me. The life growing under my feet has made us all. The life growing under my feet has made us all. The life growing under my feet has made us all.
Everybody knows that song around here, and it's alright. Ain't no
Watch for Pedro Show. Some depression. Casey Anderson. Then Victor Timofeev after that. Out of Ukraine with Nightfall. City 35. Emma Jean Thackeray. Out of England. She was on a show last week. Yella. Ray Shin. Southern Oregon. So, closer to you than me. Intermission. And then finally, Casey Anderson, the Teenage Gravity. No, like Teenage Gravity. Yeah, what's that about, like Teenage Gravity?
Oh, that's about those times where, you fall in love as more of an adult, but it feels like you were, like you did when you were a kid, like you don't really think it through. You know, I feel like the older you get, I mean, maybe this is not everybody's experience, but I feel like the older you get, the more you have to be logistical about love and relationships. And when you're a kid, you don't think that way. You know, you don't think about anything other than the moment.
Yeah, I think you're right. Well, tell me about making this record. Where was it? Done.
We did it at Avast in Seattle. We did it.
They don't understand that word. That word means halt, stop.
Yep.
Yeah, okay, you know. Go ahead.
We made it there. We tracked. I mean, I try and make records the same way every time. Track for about a week and then do a week or so of mix and then call it good. Most of the record is live. You know, we did.
And you don't write in the studio, right? You got everything. It's almost like a gig in front of the mics.
Yep, it's a gig in front of the mics. We do vocals, guitar, bass, drums, keys live, and then if something needed a little something extra, then we brought somebody in to do it.
And producer?
Producer was Kurt Block.
Yeah.
He's great, man. I mean, he's great about just like, he's great for a number of reasons, but he was really, really good with us at saying like, that's it. You know, that's the one. We're not going to do it better than that.
Kind of editor?
Yeah, yep.
Right. I mean, producers, there's all kinds. Some guys want to help write your songs.
Yeah. I've never worked with somebody like that. Like, it's either been Kurt Block or Eric Amble on all my records, and both of them just make sure that it sounds real good and that they get the best performance.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, there's a joke, right? How many producers does it take to change a light bulb? I don't know. What do you think? Right? I mean, but in another way, producers are totally responsible for a sound of a record.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, in a good way.
That's another one of those things like the band, like, You work with those people. I mean, at some level, I'm sure if, you know, there are levels of this business where you're assigned people to work with and they shape the record a certain way. But at the level at which I do it, you know, I ask Kurt to produce the record or I ask Roscoe to produce the record because I trust him and I know they're going to make it sound good.
Stooges' first album, the label gave them John Cale as producer.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And, he ended up playing it on, you know, We Will Fall. Me and Larry are going to do a version of that.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. The story is trippy. I remember, I was finally the youngest guy in the band, but they're telling me about, it was the bass man, Dave Alexander. They had run out of hash. And, hey, I know we can get high. There's this chant. And that's what that chant is. They're doing it in the tune. So, Mr. Block, he didn't have ideas like that for you, did he?
He did not. He did not. He just, like I said, he mostly, you know, said, that sounds great, or we got to do it again, or that's enough, or, you know, this, we're going to use this mic on this thing, or,
Did you bring him in earlier? You know, that some guys, even before the studio, right? What's it called? Pre-production?
Pre-production, yeah. I mean, I played the songs for him. He heard them at the same time the band did and heard us kind of work through them.
Okay. I guess, I want to get familiar.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You know, it's a kind of a trust and roll. You're going to let this guy come in. But, you know, same thing with picking a band. You're trusting these guys with your songs.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of another, maybe you can, like what's another line of work, even another art? Where, I mean, I guess a film, you know, a person who writes a film hands it off to a director and a producer to get it made.
Yeah.
But it's, you know, there aren't too many lines of work where you make something and then hand it to someone and say, you know, is this right?
You're right about that. It is a trippy, you know, but if there's a tradition, Jesus Christ,
mm-hmm.
you know, like you were talking about Mr. Earl, I mean, and he's borrowing from traditions himself, you know, so in a way, I do see a chain, a link in the chain. The thing is, yeah, to make it your own.
Yeah.
And you know, and there's a trippy thing about that, Casey, because we're born, I mean, everybody's got different thumbprints.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, so much in common, right? So that's the dangling duality I see. Whether you're bringing it to the producer or the band or listeners, gig goers, that's a trip.
It is, and it's like this, it, like you said, it's your thumbprint, it's your thing that is intrinsically your own. You made it, but on the one hand, you're working from a tradition, right? Like, I wouldn't, you know, Bob Dylan, Woody Guthrie, Screamin' Jay Hawkins, Lightnin' Hopkins, et cetera, et cetera. I'm working from a tradition that those people built, but it's in my own voice, but then you take it to other people and say, translate this.
Yeah. Yeah, trip. It's a trip. Bass players, we got to get used to that. We look good making you guys look good. So, those politics. We're at the end of the second hour, August 23rd, 2021. Dish Wap Peter's special guest, Casey Anderson. Hold that for hour three. August 23rd, 2021. It's the third hour of the Wap Peter's show.
guess I'll just lie here wondering if tomorrow is someday and you and I. We were lucky. I guess I'll just lie here wondering if tomorrow is someday. We were lucky.
Living girl. stars had torn up paper and the sky was painted black. I threw a penny in the fountain. He said I'd never get it back. We must have tossed a million wishes. I guess they all fell flat. But we were younger then, just kids. We went rushing down the hall and I stopped to knock on every door. He was staring at the skyline, my shoulders pointed to the floor. You took one last look at winter, said we won't come back no more. But we did, of course we did. Maybe I'll just stand here twisting until everything's sussed out. Well, you said that when we kissed, you took the poison from my mouth. Well, maybe that was all I had to give. But in every hollow footstep, in every muffled conversation, in every broken street lamp, in every midnight celebration, in the dolls off in the distance, in the static between stations, and that's where we'll always live. I guess I got a funny way.
Watt for Pedro show starting the third hour with Casey Anderson, the lucky ones, them babes, New York City. Why would you call your band Babes New York City? They're pretty good, but man, what a bad name. I can't get used to it. Laser Gun. Then E3 minus Track II plus BX. There's the title. Head Boggle. And Manuel Armida, Mexico City guy, but he lives up in Yellowknife, Northwest Territory. Maquina Irreparable. Yeah, you can't fix it. Okay. And finally, Casey Anderson. Just kids. Older guys. Teenage Gravity. It's time.
Yeah.
Yeah, songs, yeah, songs are for like, measuring out time.
Mm-hmm.
Richard Hell had a song called Time. He said, only time can sing a song that's really real.
Man, that's a good one.
Yeah, he's great. He's a great cat. Big inspiration to me. And I couldn't believe a bass player could lead the band. But he did. I found out later, Yes was led by their bass man. I didn't know. what's a bass like to you?
Oh, man. I think the first time that I really like noticed bass playing was on a Beastie Boys record.
Adam Yauch.
Yauch's playing was fucking cool to me. Yeah. You know how it is.
He had a trippy switch on his bass. It was a momentary spring loaded switch. So he could do scratching.
Oh, whoa.
Right? Yeah. Like, you could do it with a two pickup guitar, right? You turn one pickup volume off, right? You can Pete Townsend, right? Anyhow, anywhere. Yep. Yeah, just like a pickup selector switch solo. But he had one of those, and that's what he did in Sabotage.
Bass line.
Yeah, and fucking Harvitz told me it was him that taught the other guys how to play. He's the first guy to learn, and then he taught them guys. Yeah, beautiful man, Adam Yauch. Beautiful
man. Yeah, man.
So that was the first time, was Beastie.
That was the first time, was the Beasties, and then the next thing that I really noticed was, like, my mom, you know, because her dad played jazz, we had a lot of Mingus records around the house. And so I think that I grew up with a pretty healthy appreciation for bass players and bass players who were...
You read his book, Beneath the Underdog?
I did read his book. His book is wild.
Yeah, probably half of his bullshit, but... He didn't write on the bass. He always wrote on the piano, right? His first song is Mingus Fingers. He writes on the piano. Now, what about... You always write on guitar, is that correct?
I always write on guitar, yeah.
Yeah.
Just because it's the thing I learned first, and it's the most familiar to me, and it's the one... I mean, piano, I can play, but I think I'm what is called a lifetime learner on piano.
Yeah.
But guitar, like if I know where the thing is if I need to find it. Piano, I have to work real hard to find out where the melody is or to find out, you know, exactly what chord it is I'm looking for. But guitar, it comes easier to me.
Yeah. And titles, after or before?
Titles after. I write the thing.
Everybody's like that. I ask people. And nobody gets the titles first except me. Like, I fucking have to do it, but, like, that's why I ask everybody, because nobody does it that way. Jesus. Because I need, like, that's kind of a focus thing, you know?
Yeah, that's a cool way to do it. It's like the title comes to your head, and then you just kind of write into that?
Everything, aid and abet. Now, 90% of the time I write on the bass guitar, which is trippy. Actually, I think more and more it's going to be a composing tool because I think it opens for your collaborators. You know, piano and guitar, they have so much of the harmonic stuff. You know, so you're already look. Don't look back. You know about this documentary, right?
Mm-hmm.
What was his name? Pennebaker.
Pennebaker.
Mr. Dillon, right?
Yep.
Right, and he fought terrible with the little fucking pointy shoes and the sunglasses. I thought, nighttime. Let's play this.
Trap. And you don't look back.
let the television burn, babe. There's a riot in the street. They said the wolf was at the front door. He was lying at their feet. We felt a change, but ain't it a shame how it all turned out? It was a long time coming. It's a little late now. They're gonna stack up the dead till they block out the sun. These white boys with money make the whole world run. Let the wall hit your back, the blood hit your tongue. You and me, baby, we're the dangerous ones. You and me, baby, we're the dangerous ones. If there's a word for last winter, it's something worse than discontent. 37 years old and staying out of trouble ain't enough to make my rent. So let it burn, let it burn, let the motherfucker burn. It's election day. They shut the water off last week. I guess it's gonna burn either way. They'll shift the bodies back down with the cocaine and guns. These white boys with money make a let the wall hit your back, the blood hit your tongue. Cause you and me, brother, we're the dangerous ones. You and me, brother, we're the dangerous ones. You can cry, you can scream yourself to sleep every night. You can open up your eyes, take a look outside. Where every wall is gonna crumble, every tower's gonna fall. The earth is gonna rumble. Siren's gonna call. So you better look alive, alive. Read the black, not the white. Forget the reds and blues. Quit looking for a way out. Start looking for a way through. Well, a shot's been fired, but the war ain't won. These white boys with money better learn how to run. The wall hit your back, the blood hit your tongue. You and me, baby, we're the dangerous ones. You and me, baby, we're the dangerous
last music for this episode, Casey Anderson, Don't Look Back. This is not the Bobby Dylan, Petter Baker documentary, people. This is Casey Anderson song. You can't copyright a title. Ain't got a trip. Maybe it's good. And Victoria Shen after that with The Non-Event at Home. This is a big piece she did at her pad March 28, 2020, when the situation was just developing. And then Casey Anderson. This is Cellar Session. I found this. You play in The Dangerous Ones.
Mm.
Yeah. The Cellar.
Yep.
City Winery.
Yeah.
Yeah, how'd that happen?
They, this guy, Ehud Lazen, who works with City Winery and does those sessions, he liked my records, and so I had a gig in New York. I like pianos or something like that, and he just emailed me and said, do you want to do one of these cellar sessions? And I said I would love to, and I had that Dangerous One song was going on a record that I was making, and I wanted to try it out. That was one that I wrote with a band specifically in mind, and I hadn't played it a lot solo, and I wanted to try and slow it down and play it quieter.
You know, the situation, were you writing a buttload of songs or trading files over the internet? You couldn't tour, couldn't do gigs, right?
Yeah, couldn't do gigs. I had like a chunk of the record done. I had the basics done, but it wasn't done. And so then we started, I mean, everybody, people who didn't know how to use a home recording rig learned real quick. And then suddenly everybody
that
was
a
home.
That ain't a bad thing, Casey. That ain't bad.
It's not. Yeah. It's not a bad thing. People had to keep working.
Yeah. And it's like, just think, if only one dude knew how to write down, we had to go to the one guy to write down our stories.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. You would have a fucking writer cramp, right? So, okay, so people record at home. And
I would send the, I would do a little bit at home, and then I would send the tunes around, whatever needed to be done. Like I said, we had basics, so we had bass drums and most of the guitars, but then I wanted to change a couple things, so I would send it to a different guitar player and get something changed, or I would want strings on it, so I would send it to a string player. It's so weird. I've never made a record that way. I mean, I think a lot of people ended up making records that way who had never made records that way.
Yeah. Well, I have, but I made more.
Yeah.
Yeah, because, to me, I always knew the internet could be for more than just spread bullshit. You could actually, collaborate with people. It was just it's a matter of time. And, it'll really be bitching, Casey, when we can jam in real time without latency. That'll come.
Yeah.
Next 5-10 years.
It will.
Yeah. And, of course, it's not like being in a room with your cats, but look at all the possibilities,
Yeah.
What are your future plans?
Oh, I'm going to wait until probably next year to tour a little bit. This record is done, so I'll get it out sometime next year and then tour behind it.
Yeah, when you get done with the record, like you say, you write songs in batches. So it's weird they get done, right? Then is it like, man, time for another batch?
Yeah, I give it, I sit with it and do the, before people were staying home, I would make the record, put out the record, tour behind it, come home and rest for the holidays, and then say, okay, it's time to write another batch. This year that's going to be a little bit longer between batches, but, I'll tour behind this record, and then I'll say, it's time to do another batch.
Right. Now, there's always some shit that gets cut out, right? Does that make it to the next batch sometimes?
Sometimes it does, yeah. Sometimes it does, or sometimes, it just kind of lives, it just lives in a notebook, or it lives in,
that couplet you quote.
Yeah, like that couplet, or if we recorded a thing that in the end I feel like doesn't fit with the record, then it sits on a hard drive or it sits on tape somewhere, and then when we make the next one, I go, oh, maybe that piece fits this time.
Yeah. So, nothing's wasted. That's bitching.
Well, yeah.
I can't wait to hear the next one. It's going to be trippy. Probably the situation will inform it some, right?
Yeah, it will. I mean, it will inform it at least, the way it sounds. A lot of the songs were written before people were staying home, before people were getting sick. But the way it sounds different than records I've made just because of the way it got made, because we weren't all in the same studio at the same time.
Right. God, I've made records with cats I've never met. That's trippy, but whatever, right?
Hey, whatever works.
That's right. My pop would say that. Thank you so much, Casey. And thank you for being on the show. It's truly an honor. When you get this next batch, come back.
Oh, for sure, man. I would love to. Thank you so much for having me on. And, please take care of yourself and stay in touch. Holler anytime.
Peebo, it's been August 23rd, 2021. The Dishwap Peter, so keep your powder dry.